Hi, I'm Chris Lukianenko, and this is the Intelligent Workplace brought to you by LiveTiles. My chance to speak with the industry experts and explore the new ideas and technologies that are shaping and transforming the modern workplace. Live Smiles is a LiveTiles initiative designed to create a global community working together to make wellness at work an intrinsic part of our lives. The Live Smiles solution is technology built on top of Microsoft and LiveTiles platforms and is provided to every company globally at no cost. Live Smiles is not a product that is for sale. It's a movement to accelerate the discussion of wellness into an active and intrinsic part of work and to ultimately drive happier, healthier people at work and home. It's a combination of tech, expertise, advocacy, and community involvement. Live Smiles is driven and designed by its community. To find out more, click on the link in the show notes. How do you like to organise your life? Do you just go with the flow and let it happen? Maybe you're a list maker or a project planner. Well, me, I'm a sticky note writer and I leave them everywhere. On my desk, the refrigerator, my wallet, in my car. The reason I have them everywhere is I tend to have a bit of an overactive mind. And if I don't write that one thought down immediately, I lose it in the mix of many other random thoughts that fill my head. The art of mindfulness is not something that I am great at, so I sought out an expert to discuss it with me, as I don't think I'm alone with having too many thoughts and not enough time to deal with them. My guest on this podcast is Nina Purewal, founder of Pure Minds and co-author of the best-selling book, Let That Shit Go, a no-filter approach on how to find peace of mind and happiness in the everyday. Nina has been studying mindfulness for over 20 years and has been applying those skills in assisting her clients such as Deloitte, Viacom and Red Bull to implement mindfulness strategies to drive focus, efficiency, team cohesiveness, and overall employee contentment. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So welcome to the Intelligent Workplace podcast, Nina Purewal.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Chris, for having me.
It's wonderful to have you here. The fact that we're at opposite ends of the earth is just fantastic. I'm loving
it. It's incredible.
Yeah. Now, look, you've been studying mindfulness for a long, long time. Do you sometimes feel like people don't quite understand what mindfulness actually is?
I get a lot of questions about what is mindfulness, because I think it's having a bit of a yoga moment that yoga had, you know, in the 90s. So it's this crazy buzz term right now. So I get a lot of questions of what exactly is mindfulness, because it is a tough and a little subtle concept to grasp.
Because I think sometimes people just think it's meditation, don't they?
Yeah, they think it's meditation, or they think it's, you know, being in the moment all the time. And there's a lot of misconceptions out there about what it actually is.
So what do you give people as your elevator pitch for mindfulness?
So the elevator pitch that I give is mindfulness is about being fully present. So just being in the here and now and being in the moment. So the simple example is, if you're going for a walk along the beach, are you actually just simply walking along the beach, or are you thinking about the past and thinking about the future and thinking about your to-do list and thinking about all the things you have to do at work or that argument you got in with someone? Your mind is constantly going into all these places. So mindfulness is just about bringing you back to the here and now and feeling the sand on your feet and the wind against your skin and breathing in the fresh air.
I'm with you. It's a really powerful thing, mindfulness, but along the lines of it being misunderstood, I think also people seem to believe that it's a cure-all for all of your bad thoughts, but it's really an overall plan, isn't it?
It is. And we talk a lot about thoughts in the books and in our workshops, and the fact that these thoughts that we have, it's part of our mind's job to think thoughts. So the thoughts never really go away, not to make that sound discouraging, because I still have negative thoughts. I still have challenging thoughts, and I've been practicing this for 20 years. But what happens when you practice mindfulness is that the relationships with your thoughts change. So they might not trigger you or affect you as much as they used to, because they still come, but how you interact with those thoughts internally changes when you practice mindfulness.
That whole idea of being present, I actually find it really difficult sometimes, because my mind tends to wander quite easily. How can I be better at that?
That's a great question. So I think there's another misconception about mindfulness, that you are present 24/7, or you have an hour where you're fully present, right? And the way I like to think about it is that your mind is constantly wandering, and mindfulness is just about bringing it back and bringing it back and bringing it back. And I have an example of, you know, I asked one of my teachers when I was studying, you know, I was in corporate and I was really stressed out, and I said, you know, this whole being present thing is a bunch of BS. Like, how do you actually do it? And he gave me a very practical example, and he said, you know, start by speaking out loud or speaking in your mind what you are doing. So let's say you're doing the dishes. your dialogue is going to start sounding something like this. Now I'm putting soap on the sponge. Now I'm making circular motions on this pot. Now I'm rinsing this pot. Now I'm putting this pot on the drying rack. Same goes for when you're out for a walk or when you're in the shower. It's like, are you ever actually in the shower? Are you ever actually out for a walk? Are you ever actually doing the dishes? And note that, you know, let's say you practice this with doing the dishes. I know you're laughing because it sounds totally crazy, but when you do this, it brings you back to the here and now. And in a 15-minute span of you doing the dishes, you might have to bring your mind back 30 times.
Wow.
You know, even me, a mindfulness practitioner, it's not like in 15 minutes, I am fully present the whole time. It's just that I'm aware that my mind runs off and then I bring it back. You know, we think between 50,000 and 70,000 thoughts a day, right? So it's just about being aware of those thoughts and bringing them back. And another really great tool is to lean into your senses. So in that moment, you know, what are you touching? What are you smelling? What are you tasting? And that gets you inherently into the here and now.
Oh, wow. Well, here I am looking at my computer screen, talking into my microphone right now. Is that working? Is that what
I'm looking for? Exactly. You got it. You've mastered it. That's it.
So what actually led you to dedicate so much of your life to the art of mindfulness?
Well, if I can be totally honest and vulnerable, when I was 16, I went through a pretty horrific tragedy. I lost my dad and my younger brother.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Very unexpectedly. And it was at that time that I started to really question, you know, what is life all about and what's my purpose and why am I here? And I started getting into studying mindfulness and meditation and just classical spiritual philosophy, even if you will. And, you know, I went down a traditional path of getting my business degree and having a great career, but I always kept my, you know, studies of mindfulness, you know, with me as well. And I found that with all the therapists I saw and psychologists and child psychiatrists and support groups, the one thing that kept me grounded, that kept me happy, that kept me fulfilled and peaceful was my mindfulness practice. And so that's why, you know, after a number of years in corporate, I said, I really want to mix my passion and my business sense. And, you know, I really want to help other people find calm in chaos and know that through adversity, you can find that happiness because this is how I found it. And so that's why, you know, I'm so passionate about kind of teaching it today.
It's amazing out of such tragedy, you've been able to find something that can help you get through. I really have no words. I wasn't aware of the situation around your tragedy. In doing my research, it wasn't sort of mentioned, but I can understand how you would be searching for something. And did it take you a long time to find mindfulness from the age of 16 onwards?
It's been a journey. Yeah. So when I started studying, it was in the mid 90s and the word mindfulness wasn't even existed, right? So it was kind of more meditation had and classical, you know, spiritual philosophy. So, you know, Hinduism, Buddhism, and that's kind of where I started studying. And so it's been this journey. And as I, you know, have gone along in the most recent years, as I worked in corporate, mindfulness is kind of the one thing that really helps me because it's like, wow, my mind can be, you know, my worst enemy or my best friend. And how do I lean into my mind and all these thoughts that I'm thinking and all these overwhelming feelings of anxiety or depression or, you know, jealousy or anger? How do I help myself by better understanding those emotions? So that's kind of, you know, where I don't think, and I asked one of my teachers this, I said, you know, when do you actually get there where you've just been practice all the time? And he looked at me and he said, Nina, it's not a destination, it's a journey. So I feel like it's this constant evolution of practice. And the deeper you go, the more you find and the more there is to unravel.
Yeah. And then sort of you fast forward into your adult life and you say you've sort of worked in the corporate life and all that sort of thing. And then, you know, in recent times, you took a 12-month sabbatical, which I'm assuming is what you needed to get the motivation to write this book that you've released, which is called Let That Shit Go, and it was with your co-author, Kate. Is that what you needed? You needed that time out to get that headspace to share some of your learnings with others?
Yeah. It wasn't even about sharing. It was about my own journey, and I hit a peak point of stress, you know, sparked by the corporate grind, and I said, you know, I was addicted to my email and my BlackBerry or CrackBerry, as they called it at the time. I was working, you know, 24/7. I was constantly in my own head and I knew something had to change. I had to do something drastic. And so, yeah, I think what happened in that year, because I totally unplugged in that year, I told my friends if they wanted to get a hold of me, they could write me letters. And I sent and received actually 150 letters that year. But I because I didn't have any distractions in work, in, you know, social media, phones, TV, anything, I was able to actually focus on myself. And it's really funny because when shit comes up for us now, it's so easy to distract ourselves, to talk to someone, to turn on Netflix, to, you know, look at our phones, yeah, instead of actually deal with what's going on. And so when And so when I was, you know, living in the ashram and in the Redwoods, when stuff came up for me, it was like, it was me and nature and I had to deal with it. And so there was a lot of stuff that I had suppressed and that I, you know, I had all this knowledge, but I wasn't really putting it into action. And so that's the year that I kind of started to own it. And that space gave me the ability to really digest what was going on for me and how to apply the knowledge.
And so what did you actually set out to achieve then in taking those thoughts and those ideas and actually writing about it and then sharing it with people?
Yeah. So when I came back from the course, I, you know, went back into corporate a little bit, you know, for a few more years. I worked in cause marketing. I was like, I want to do something good. I worked for an environmental company. And then I kind of hit this point of like, I started having a lot of personal conversations with people and I was like, the world needs this. People are, you know, 85% of corporate America is highly stressed out. Anxiety's on the rise, depression's on the rise, not to be a downer, but suicide is on the rise, especially for teens. And so I was like, I need to do something to spread this knowledge. And so that's when I started my business, in 2017. And I started just doing workshops. Kate and I did workshops in Toronto on, you know, calling them Mindful AF. It was her idea to add all these swearing words because it just made them more accessible, right? So it was Mindful AF and we taught learn how to fucking meditate. And they totally went viral. And it was actually HarperCollins, the publishing company, that approached us and said, hey, do you want to turn these workshops into book material? Because I had no plans on writing a book.
Oh, great.
And so that's how it came to fruition. And how I let that shit go came to fruition is just like from us, you know, putting all this content out there.
So that concept of leaving things in the past, you know, drawing a line in the sand, it's not that easy. I mean, you obviously went through that yourself, but what's the best way to get started with the whole mindset of letting shit go?
That's a great question. And I think the biggest thing to allow yourself to do is to be aware of the shit you're holding on to. Every chapter focuses on all the shit we're holding on to. So one chapter is, you know, about self-love and how we are constantly badgering ourselves. You know, 80% of our, you know, thoughts are actually negative. And they're self-deprecating. And so being aware of those thoughts is kind of the first step. You know, another chapter we talk about perspective, you know, looking at life from a big picture perspective, because we're so into the nitty gritty. So we hold on to all these things. You know, if you think of children, if you think of toddlers, they're inherently happy. They're inherently peaceful. You know, they cry if they're hungry or if they're tired. So what has happened over time as adults, as we enter into adulthood, is we've added all this shit into our lives. And I think the first step is realizing what shit we're holding on to. And the moment we can look at it, which is, you're right, it's not easy. It's really hard. And I had to go through a whole journey with the loss of, you know, my dad and brother to bring that forward again and to say, there's all this grief that I haven't dealt with. And the moment that I could bring it up and deal with it, which is hard, it's not easy to deal with the emotions and to bring them to surface. But the moment I could do that is the moment that I could let go. Because if you're not acknowledging it, then you're in suppression mode. So we talk a lot in the book about the importance of not just being like, oh, this happened, let it go. Like, it's not like that simple. It's important to first recognize the things you're holding on to, bring them to surface, acknowledge them, deal with them, and then let them go.
This is feeling a little bit like a bit of a therapy session for me here today. I'm not saying in a lighthearted manner. I wasn't going to mention this, but obviously you've really shared with me here. About 13 years ago now, my wife and I, we had a really devastating event in our life as well. Our young son Tom was born and died pretty much immediately, which was a massive thing. And sort of once I started to deal with that, I adopted this whole mantra of not sweating the small stuff, which I think pretty much aligns to what you're talking about. You know, don't worry about the little things in life; just get on with you know, the important stuff. But I think sometimes people take that as me being a little bit, I don't know, blasé or uninterested, perhaps. But I think it's a bit of a self-preservation tactic for my mind, but maybe I've been going about it the wrong way.
First of all, thank you so much for sharing that. And I can't, you know, I can't imagine the sorrow and the grief that you both went through. That's just so tragic and heartbreaking.
I just felt we were in a good place here. It was a good conversation to be having, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, so I would say there's kind of two parts to your thought. And one is, I agree with you too. The whole not sweating the small stuff is such a great tool. And we talk about it in the perspective chapter because, you know, when losing my dad and brother has really helped me put it the perspective, life into perspective, not sweat the small stuff. So when I was at work, it was like, you know, nothing was as stressful as losing half my family. You know, nothing, like the stress doesn't compare. And I agree too. Sometimes you can't relate to people because they're really stressed about little things. And you're just like, that is not as stressful. You know, we have this exercise where it's like, when you wake up in the morning, what do you stress about? Write it all down and then rank everything from 1 to 10. And I work with a lot of corporate executives and it's like, I have the most stressful job, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. And then I ask them, you know, what is the worst possible thing that could happen to you or someone you love? What is the worst possible thing? And obviously it's also always life and death, right?
Yeah.
And I said, so now rank that. What is that? Oh, okay, a 10. Okay, so what is your work stress now?
Yeah.
You know, because that's really not a 10. So I think there's so much validity in that. And I think that's a very, very powerful tool. And I love that you do that. And I think if that's where you are, that's fantastic. Where the cautionary piece is have you, you know, not you personally, but any challenge you went through, there was a lot of stuff surrounding my dad and my brother that I hadn't dealt with. I'm going to be even more vulnerable here and share. And I talk about this in the book, but it was actually a murder-suicide.
Oh my God.
And had, you know, life been the situation that night been different, my dad was, you know, planning on taking me too. And so there was a lot of anger that as a child that I, you know, had towards him that I never dealt with. And it was just like, okay, it's fine. Don't smell the small stuff, da, da, da. But I didn't deal with, you know, my anger. And I realized my only way out of this, of holding on to all this is to forgive him. So there's a whole chapter on forgiveness and my journey there. But so there was unresolved stuff, right? There was unresolved stuff there. So I think if there's no unresolved stuff and you've kind of dealt with it and you've gone through the grief and you and your wife have healed in the way that you felt was best, and now you're in a place of don't sweat the small stuff, that's fantastic. But if there's stuff that's still lingering for anyone going through challenges that, you know, you're holding on to, and I didn't even realize I was holding on to it. But the minute I realized was when I could bring it to surface, and I spent about a year pragmatically understanding how to forgive, going through all the motions. And it was really, really challenging. But once I did that, it was like a huge weight. And honestly, that's when my business came forward. That's when my book launched, you know, and so many magical things happened for me because I wasn't holding on to the past anymore. So I think only you know where you are in your journey. And if you're in a good place with it, then yeah, absolutely. Don't sweat the small stuff.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked here this morning where this interview has actually gone in terms of how much we're like, thank you so much for sharing that this morning. Oh, wow. I almost feel like I have to take a breath for a second.
Let's take a breath.
Like, it's just amazing that out of everything you've been through that you've been able to find that silver lining in that very, very dark cloud and you know, turn that into something positive, which is this book that is helping so many people. And it is helping so many people because, you know, you're a best-selling author with this book now, aren't you?
Yeah, actually, we just found out we were in the top 10 nonfiction Canadian authors of 2019. So that's super
amazing.
Exciting. Super, super exciting.
It feels like there's a potential second book that they might need to write if you're doing that well.
There's talk of it. It might be on the list for 2020. So I mean, like I said earlier, the biggest thing for Kate and I is that it's helping people and it's impacting lives. And that's, you know, that's how we kind of define success over anything monetary.
It's interesting, before you were talking about the stressed out executives and all that sort of thing. And being that I work for a tech company, I was interested to know what your thoughts are around, you know, where does technology play a part in this? I mean, I learned how to meditate myself with an app on my phone.
Great.
But I also can see that, you know, the phone itself can be a little bit evil because it's it's always on and it's always letting me know what's going on elsewhere and distracting me. So do you see technology as a help or a hindrance in what you're trying to achieve here?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, and I think it's both. So it's really important to understand where tech is helping you and where tech is hindering. And especially with social media, I would say a couple of things. One is set boundaries for yourself. So a lot of people intend to scroll Instagram for 5 minutes and there they are half an hour later.
Yeah.
Just if you want to have phone time, like, hey, it's relaxing. It's, it activates your parasympathetic nervous system. It's a way to kind of just, decompress, and that's fine. But if you're finding that you're needing it to, you're becoming addicted to it and, an hour goes by, then, be aware of that and set boundaries for yourself and be aware, we call it the tech hangover or the Instagram hangover. Also be aware of, what you're doing on there. I make it a point to follow people who I believe in, who believe in the things that I'm passionate about. But a lot of people end up scrolling, the ex-boyfriend from high school that they let get away, or, that person that they couldn't stand in corporate that's now like a CEO or a founder of some big company. Yeah. And it's like, stop with the toxicity. Like, you're doing it to yourself. So really be aware in tech of, like, when you're using it, is it making you feel good, or are you inadvertently kind of badgering yourself because you end up like looking at all these people who you don't feel up to snuff with? And then I would also say, that people, especially when it comes to social media — I get to corporate in a second — but when it comes to social media, people need to be aware that what people are posting are their highlight reels. I mean, more and more people are becoming a little bit more vulnerable, but it's like that vacation and then, this promotion I got and this crazy party that I went to and this art gallery and da, da, da. And it's like, nobody's talking about the shitty fights that they're having or the fact that their flight got delayed or, the nights they're crying themselves to sleep. No one's posting about that. So if you're on there comparing yourself to everybody's highlight reel and top 2% of life, you're not comparing yourself to anyone that actually exists.
Yep.
So being aware of that is very important, that what people are putting out there, and especially for teens, because I feel like, they sometimes don't have that perspective that what the beautiful selfies that are being filtered 1,000 times is not real. And then when it comes to corporate, like, being someone who used to be, addicted to work and all that stuff, I think it's so important. And I hope companies are, being more and more advocates of, shutting down at 5, having reasonable work hours, allowing people to unplug on vacation. Like, this whole notion of like taking work on vacation, like, no wonder people are so stressed out. No wonder people are angry, like, taking their paid time off and working. You need that mental break if you want more. So when I managed my last team, the team of 8, and I realized when they were working on vacation, they were coming back like more pissed off, more tired, more miserable, because like, they use their vacation time or on the beach, So I implemented a rule: no working on vacation. Like, I don't want to hear from you. Don't even take your phone. Don't even open your email. Take your email off work, off your phone. And I found when they were coming back, they were way more refreshed. They were way happier. They wanted to work for the company. And you're still thinking about work when you're on vacation, but when you're not in the nitty-gritty and the day-to-day and dealing with this P&L or this price increase or da-da-da, you're thinking strategically. So you're doing yourself a favor, because your employees are going to come back and be so much more, open-minded about the business. Like, I went away for 5 days and I left my phone in the safe and I just took a journal and the stuff I planned out for 2020 was incredible. I was like, Oh my gosh, like, I could think strategically. So, I think there's so many different things companies can do. The other big thing is the email notification.
Yes.
They're saying now, there's been a study that's done that said that companies are now losing 20 to 40% of efficiency because people are so distracted. Because, you need 25 minutes to get into, a flow of what you're working on. And if you're constantly having that dinging of email, or your phone going off or people interrupting you, you're never going to get into a state of flow. So I think, there's certain little techniques that we talk about in the book about, finding your tech zen and how to create that balance. Cause it's great. I mean, look at us, we're halfway around the world recording this podcast. It's fantastic.
It is.
But you need to make sure you're leveraging it in a positive way.
So when you work with your corporates on mindfulness, how do you sell this? Like, I find it could be difficult to get the corporates to buy into it, because everything's about KPIs and return on investment, all that sort of thing. So are you tying this whole idea into maybe a preventative mental health message when you pitch it, or maybe a message of increased productivity because you're going to get people into the right mindset to get the best out of themselves? Or how do you go about it?
Yeah, so that's one part of it is, like, you know, it definitely helps with focus. It helps with productivity. Mental health is another, you know, angle. People are just, companies are losing, you know, money because people are taking long-term mental health leaves, right? So I think 10 years ago when I was in corporate, it was all about CSR, right? Corporate social responsibility. Yep. What are you doing for the environment? And all that stuff is still very important. But now I think things have come to a bit of a head where it's like, well, what are you doing for me as a stressed out employee? And, you know, the way I talk about it is, like, if you want your employees to be happy, if you want them to be calm, if you want them to be peaceful, you know, which therefore leads to effectiveness and efficiency and focus, and, you know, which leads to obviously increased revenues, then, you know, you got to take care of your people. And in my previous role, I always told my global CEO, I said, our company, our country P&L is like just as important as the people I manage.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, having that perspective for companies and knowing that they need to invest in their people is kind of a great starting point for me. And that's what it's about for me, is just impacting those lives at the end of the day.
So what do you think has been the most important lesson you've learned through this whole 20-year mindfulness journey?
Oh my gosh.
just one.
Great question. Just one. I think the most important lesson I've learned, I don't know if there's probably so many, but one of the most is that you are not your mind. Your mind loves to play tricks on you. It loves to get the best of you. It loves to take you down all these spirals. And, you know, from the traditional spirituality that I studied, it's like we are all one. You are consciousness. You are love. You are peace. You are joy. You are bliss. And I think we forget that. We forget our true nature. We forget who we are because our mind just takes over. And so the minute we can get a better handle on our mind by understanding how to deal with this crazy mind of ours is the minute that we can, you know, live a more peaceful life. And I think that's what's helped me most, is that, you know, I am not my mind. I'm not my thoughts. I am much more than that. And how do I then deal with this one small part of me?
That is beautiful. I actually thought you were going to go with the learn to love yourself angle there.
Oh, that's so important too.
That's a big takeaway from all the reading that I've been doing. And without sounding cheesy, you know, the Whitney Houston song is true. The first step is learning to love yourself. You know?
It's so true. But that is part of the mind, right? Because as I said earlier, 80% of the thoughts we think are, you know, negative self-talk. We have a little tip. The book is filled with 100 tips on, you know, how to be more mindful. And one of them is, like, stop being such an asshole to yourself.
Fair enough.
You know, so that's part of the mind, is self-love. The self-love for me is not bubble baths and spa dates and days on the golf course. It is, but it's also at the crux. What are you saying to yourself? And so I think that's kind of encompassing, is like the self-love piece. But yeah, that is also very important.
And the book, once again, is called Let That Shit Go, available on Amazon and many other great booksellers, of course. Thank you so much, Nina, for this chat today. You know, sometimes I have these chats and I have my notes and I'm sort of think the conversation's going in a certain direction. And then I meet someone like you and both of us open up and share things we probably weren't expecting to share. And it's just turned into a wonderful conversation. So I just want to thank you for your time. And that was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris, for this opportunity. And I really genuinely love talking to you today. Thank you for sharing as well. It was great.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining me on the Intelligent Workplace podcast, brought to you by LiveTiles. If you have any feedback or want to suggest a guest for a future show, email podcast@livetiles.nyc. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.